From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
We're inching closer to Governor Pritzker's budget address on Wednesday. Most are bracing for what could be a tight fiscal year. Meanwhile, Pritzker continues to battle the Trump administration. And is there any update on the Chicago Bears' quest for a new stadium? We'll talk about that and more coming up on State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield. Our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, Professor Emeritus and former Director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. Charlie's also been a longtime reporter and observer. And our guest this week, the Chicago Tribune's Jeremy Gorner, joins us. And Jeremy, good to have you back on the show.
Thanks, Sean. Glad to be here.
So, Jeremy, I'll start with you. A lot of anticipation for this speech. Governor, of course, every year will lay out the fiscal vision for the state that he has, but he's continuing to deal with this uncertainty from the federal level. Just this week, the Trump administration denied a request for emergency aid for a northern Illinois storm that happened last summer, cutting some public aid grants as well, though a judge has temporarily blocked it. Pritzker believes this is all political. And this really does cast a shadow over the state and the budget expectations as we head into next week, doesn't it?
It does, Sean. And I think what you might expect during the governor's budget address on Wednesday is just more of his disdain for President Trump. The governor has really positioned himself nationally on the Democratic platform as really probably the most formidable critic of the president of any Democrat nationally. And let's just kind of set this up by recapping what we saw a year ago. During the governor's State of the State and budget address last year, we were probably about a month into President Trump's second term. And if you recall, the governor gained, he generated a lot of buzz by likening Trump's leadership to that of Nazi-era Germany, talking about threats to democracy. This obviously was decried by a lot of Republicans in the legislature after all that rhetoric. But really what the governor was doing was warning about what could be ahead with Trump in power again. And, you know, he talked about this idea of, you know, of threats to democracy coming from the Trump administration, from various steps they've taken. But, you know, you also talk about this deprivation of federal funding. There was just an uncertainty that Trump is going to punish blue states by just not giving them federal funding, which we've seen. So the key difference between last year's budget address and what's to come this year is that last year the governor was issuing a lot of warnings about what he thought was to come. Now, what those warnings, according to Pritzker, have turned into a reality. So the question is where do you go from here? And you know, there have been contingencies that the governor has announced about. You know, at the end of last year, he directed state agencies to set aside, I believe it was like 4% of their reserves. I think it was last month the governor announced that there was about $500 million total that the state had set aside in reserves to counteract, to offset any, you know, from all those state agencies to offset any, any losses in federal funding from the Trump administration. They've, of course, fought a lot of this in court, too. I mean, Kwame Raoul, the Illinois Attorney General, has been very active. I think there's been more than 50 lawsuits against the Trump administration on various issues, including clawing back or pulling away from federal funding to Illinois. But, you know, that accounts for a pretty sizable portion of the state budget, you know, especially when it comes to the way that the state administers Medicaid and SNAP benefits. I think in October, you know, there was an estimated budget deficit of $2.2 billion, which was not as dire as what we saw from the governor's budget office in the fall of 2024. But still, it's still caused a lot of concern. I mean, he's got, in addition to the uncertainty of federal funding, you know, the governor's under pressure, going to be under pressure from progressive Democrats to fully fund education, to fully fund healthcare. There's going to be pension obligations, which obviously take up an extremely sizable portion of the budget every year. And you might hear a lot more rhetoric from the governor about belt tightening. I believe last year, one of the things we heard is like, look, you really want something in this budget, speaking to lawmakers, then you got to make a suggestion on what we're going to take out. And I think given what the forecast looks like at the federal level and just still this uncertainty from the Trump administration going into year two of his presidency and how that's going to affect Illinois, I think we might hear more of that from the governor on Wednesday.
Yeah, that's a good point. Charlie, last year at this time, when the governor was putting his budget together, I think we said at the time that it was maybe the toughest budget that a governor in our memory would have to put together because of all that uncertainty. Well, some of that uncertainty is now known. Still, a lot is not. So the governor, last year it seemed to go ahead and say, we're going to go on best case scenario and believe that the money that's been appropriated is going to come through. Can he do that this year?
No, I don't think he will, because he's well aware that from his perspective, President Trump is very vindictive, and he gets his jollies by attacking people who are his enemies and trying to mess them up however he can. And Pritzker is one of the most vocal and strident critics of the Trump administration. So whenever there's an opportunity to shortchange Illinois by the feds, we could look forward to that happening. It was interesting because roughly a week or so ago, the governor's Office of Management and Budget, which is the fiscal gurus for the executive branch, put out a budget report warning that the changes at the federal level were going to have a significant impact on Illinois going forward. Based on the bill that President Trump signed last year, the big, beautiful, whatever it is, act. And then basically what Gombe was saying is that the enacted federal funding cuts and the threatened ones are creating tremendous uncertainty in this fiscal year and going forward. And they point out a number of things that we're facing. One is they estimate $100 million over 2 years to implement some of the changes related to the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, the SNAP, and Medicaid requirements. $705 million in new benefit spending if we don't reduce our error rate in food stamps to match what the feds want it to be. $6 billion in cumulative lost revenue for Medicaid. $1 billion in childcare related funding if the courts allow the administration's funding freeze to take effect. Now, a judge on Friday, after this report came out, a judge temporarily blocked the freeze from taking immediate effect. But it's going to be a very difficult time. And one of the things that I thought was maybe a mistake on the governor's part is that he said last week that he wants to fully fund the state's pension obligations by 2048 rather than the current plan to fund them at 90% by 2045. And he wants to take surplus money, what he calls surplus money, in the income tax refund fund. We always set aside more money than we wind up needing, so there's some left over there. He wants to go to the pensions. There are some bonds that are going to be paid off in coming years, and he wants to use those revenues to put towards the pensions. And he wants to basically devote a lot of money to taking care of the pensions. And that, in like the best of all worlds, that would be a good idea. But it strikes me that him coming out and saying we have this extra money to put into pensions is just like a signal to all the interest groups to say, oh, well, let's use it for other things. As a matter of fact, there was legislation introduced to significantly increase state education funding. And the package that they're talking about would cost probably another several hundred million dollars this year. And right now we have a formula that says based on each individual school district's needs in terms of the kids it serves, what its demographic makeup is, what it can raise on its own, the state will make up the difference. And this is called an evidence-based funding formula. And the idea was that we were supposed to get schools up to, with between their own resources, what the state would put in, get them up to basically full funding by 2027. The legislation was introduced that would do that. And I don't see how that's going to be able to be passed given the fiscal situation. And there's a whole bunch of other things that lawmakers are going to be pushing for. Higher ed wants more money. Healthcare wants more money. And so, as I say, it struck me as a difficult position for the governor to say, well, we found this extra money, let's put it in pensions. And all the interest groups are saying, whoa, if we have extra money, let's put it to education, let's put it to healthcare, let's put it to things that benefit people immediately, rather than being able to say, make sure we have enough money in the funds 20 years from now to be able to pay retirement benefits to current workers. In a sense, I'm not a conflict of interest, but I'm affected because I'm a state university retiree. And so I get a pension from the state university every month. Of course, I also get one from the Sun-Times, so I'm not totally reliant on the state. And Sean, I imagine someday you will be getting a state university retirement system
right.
check up.
Right, right. And you know, the other thing, Charlie, other than the credit rating agencies and maybe the public employee unions not hearing a big outcry for people to say address this pension issue, they have been putting money toward the pension system each year. But this would be a more dramatic shift of resources.
Yeah.
Jeremy, do you think, like Charlie said, that this was a mistake to open this door and say, hey, there's some money under the couch cushions here?
It's hard to say if it was a mistake. I mean, I guess what I think of, and it's interesting, you know, I think it's an interesting, it's interesting timing by the governor, you know, that he brings up this pension issue. If you recall, during springtime, the legislature, you know, they passed this pension sweetener bill for first responders, for Chicago police and Chicago firefighters. It was basically to bring, I believe it was to bring Chicago police officers on par with, firefighters and including from downstate. You know, there was, it really passed with near unanimous Democratic support. And I believe there was like, you know, I think it was near unanimous support even from Republicans, maybe. I know that there really wasn't, or at some point it was. But at any rate, you know, there's been concern since then from Republicans who've been kind of ringing the bell that this is going to cost a lot of money, basically, to to shore up, this pension adjustment for first responders. I mean, I believe there was at least one editorial about it. I know we did like a couple of stories on it. And what the Fraternal Order Police would say, and I believe even the and I believe this, you know, this had come up even from proponents of the bill who were pushing this, is that this was a promise that apparently the governor had made around the time that he was first elected in 2019, you know, that he was going to do this pension fix for Chicago police. The city of Chicago has big concerns about this as well, because if you recall, they could barely pass their own budget at the end of 2025. I believe what ended up happening, it was the city council that came up with an alternate budget, and that ended up passing instead of, you know, Mayor Brandon Johnson's own budget. But, and I bring up Chicago because of a lot of what Chicago does, a lot of what happens in Chicago, of course, is reflective of the state as well, just because of Chicago being the economic engine that it is. But the point is that this pension bill was criticized by a lot of people as like, I don't know, this could end up costing the state a lot more money. You know, we don't care if the governor had made a promise to help first responders here. So could this be a way to maybe throw everybody else a bone and say, we have this extra money and we're going to try to get this right by 2048, by instead of 90%, we're going to do the full 100%. You know, maybe the governor here is trying to be more pragmatic and trying to, you know, calm down any opposition to that last pension bill. I don't know. But that's kind of what I was thinking of when the governor made this announcement in recent weeks about the 2048 plan, and among others, was, you know, what happened last year and how there were concerns from some factions that the last pension legislation that passed was, you know, could be rather costly.
I always look at plans like this very long term and think to myself, well, this may hold if he got it through. When Pritzker's in office, once he's out of office, who knows? We're seeing that at the federal level with changes, policy changes that are being made by the Trump administration, undoing a lot of what Barack Obama, Joe Biden's administrations did. So it's only as good as future General Assemblies would want to go along with it. But let's move on, because we're going to talk about the budget, of course, next week once the governor gives his address. I did want to touch on another issue, and Jeremy, you've been following this, the Chicago Bears wanting to move from Soldier Field. We've been talking about it on the show, trying to figure out what's exactly happening. It sounds like people are talking.
We reported earlier this week that really it was I believe it was ahead of the Bears-Packer playoff game, the one playoff game that the Bears won, right? The governor had been scheduled to meet with, he had two scheduled conversations with NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell while Goodell was in Chicago for that Bears-Packers playoff game. So clearly there's been some serious discussions there. I mean, and this comes at a time where, you know, as you and Sean and Charlie and, you know, Sean, your listeners are well aware, the Bears' lobbying efforts have really fallen short in Springfield in the last couple of years. It's been pretty clear that any kind of Governor Pritzker and Democratic leadership in the legislature, they've made it pretty clear that they don't want public funding to be set aside for new stadiums, but they are willing to, the state is willing to chip in if it's for infrastructure improvements. So for like roads and sewer improvements, or for example, around any stadium that's built, which is a courtesy that would be extended to any business coming to Illinois, right? I mean, that's been kind of what Pritzker has said about infrastructure. But at the same time, you know, the Bears are really pushing for this plan called payment in lieu of taxes. It's so-called mega project legislation, where it would basically allow the Bears to negotiate what their property tax rate would be with local governments, with local taxing bodies in the Arlington Heights area, where the Bears, it appeared up until the end of last year, were really eyeing their move towards, because they had purchased what used to be the Arlington racetrack. But obviously since then, Northwest Indiana, the Bears have said that they're also looking at Northwest Indiana, since their lobbying efforts in Springfield have really fallen short. The Indiana legislature has introduced, you know, a measure that would create an authority that would basically assist the Bears in their endeavor, you know, for public incentives in the state of Indiana to move to Hammond or Gary or wherever it is. I believe we were talking before the show, Charlie, you brought up Portage, Indiana, has expressed interest. And also, Governor Mike Braun in Indiana even alluded to the fact in his state of the state that he really wanted to work hard to bring the Bears to Indiana. But, you know, their legislative session, I believe it ends in the next month or a couple of weeks or something. Whereas February 27th, right. So clock is ticking there. And again, even if they pass legislation, they still need the Bears to agree to move there. But what we've seen in the last week is, you know, the governor was in Belleville in southwestern Illinois for a separate event, and was asked about all this. And, you know, he basically sounded more optimistic about his discussions with the Bears than he has in months, at least that I've, you know, seen. I believe the quote was, as he says that, he and his staff have made progress to incentivize the football team to stay in Illinois. We're not sure exactly what that progress looks like so far. I know there was one news report, local TV here in Chicago, that said they were close to a deal with Illinois lawmakers. But I talked to lawmakers who were involved in these discussions that said saying that they're close is a little premature, but it does sound like that there's wheels in motion. They still, the Bears have been eyeing again that pilot legislation to negotiate proper, you know, the property tax rate with the taxing bodies in Arlington Heights. That's still something they're concentrating on. And also, there's also been discussions about affordability, making the Bears making ticket prices affordable for fans to actually go to the games. So that's something else they're talking about. But I think like another big piece that we have to discuss too is if you want any piece of legislation, as you both know, in the Illinois House to get passed, Speaker Welch has this really informal rule that he wants 60 House Democrats to be on board before it's even called for a vote. There's this big hurdle for Chicago state lawmakers. Are Chicago state lawmakers going to want to vote yes on something that will incentivize the Bears to leave the city limits?
Charlie, we've talked before, and you've kind of thrown a lot of cold water on the thought that they were going to deal with this issue this spring. Are you changing your mind?
I'm thinking that if they do actually take action on it, it won't be until probably April, because they're going to come in, they're going to hear the budget address, but then the March primary, March 17th primary is coming up, and the legislature is not going to want to do a whole lot before the primary, and then it'll take time to put stuff together. So I think the bottom line is, I think Arlington Heights still is probably the most likely winner in this sweepstakes. And part of the difficulty, as was alluded to, is the Bears are planning not just a stadium, but there's going to be like a Bear Village around there. And they're thinking about having housing. They're going to bring in shops and restaurants and the whole nine yards. And so if I'm a school board member in one of those suburban districts, and I'm thinking, well, the Bears want us to guarantee a particular property tax rate going forward for 20, 30 years. And they're going to do a development that's going to bring in a lot of housing, families with kids. I'm not sure I can commit to that without knowing what kind of impact it's going to have in the future. So I think that's going to be a stumbling block, but it can be worked out. And I think, as Jeremy says, the problem is how you get Chicago lawmakers to go ahead with a plan to move the Bears anywhere other than the city. Now, I might add that one of the interesting things about Portage, Indiana's proposal that they unveiled this week was that it was for a $5 billion project on a 300-acre site that would have a stadium that would come fully privately financed with zero taxpayer burden and zero debt on the team. There's a Chicago businessman, Lou Weisbach, who is saying that he would pay for the whole thing and then recover his investment over time. But that would be something to think about, you know, because the Bears wouldn't have to pay anything. That would be good for them, I guess. And also, and this is sort of almost comically, the state of Iowa has got into the game. This past week, Iowa lawmakers introduced legislation that would expand the current state economic development program to include building an NFL stadium in Iowa. And I'm thinking to myself, the odds of the Bears moving to Iowa are about as great as me being signed to play quarterback for the Bears next year. If you're going to move the Bears that far away, you might as well move them back to Decatur
Well, I can
to
tell
be the
you,
Staleys again.
I can tell you as a Packer fan, Wisconsin's not interested, I'm sure. So it's time now for our notes from the field. And Jeremy, we'll go to you first. You covered a pretty big event this week.
This hasn't gotten as much fanfare as the Democratic primary, but there was a ABC 7 Chicago candidate forum for the Republican candidates for U.S. Senate. Forum included Don Tracy, who is the former head of the Illinois Republican Party, Casey Schliebeck, who has run for Senate, I believe, a couple once or twice before, and Jeannie Evans, who's an antitrust lawyer. She's kind of billing herself as a fresh face to the Republican Party. She's You know, her husband's a professor at University of Chicago. They're the three main Republican candidates. And obviously, you know, Don Tracy's run for office before. He was a lieutenant governor candidate. But basically what it was is that you know, during the forum, they really kind of avoided airing disagreements with President Trump's policies while still acknowledging, you know, some key differences, you know, that they had. You know, but at the same time, all three candidates basically said that they did not support Trump's call to nationalize elections. One of the things that Tracy said is that he does support photo ID, and I believe so does Evans, one of the other candidates, kind of came out in favor of that as well. They also had expressed concerns about Trump's tariff policies, with Evans noting that she's a free market economist, while Tracy contended, you know, we've been subsidizing the world, including China and Europe, for way too long. Schliebeck said that the tariff should not be used in an arbitrary fashion. And should be used as maybe only to retaliate against countries during certain instances. Largely, they supported President Trump. They were really kind of shy about disagreements, you know, any disagreements they had with him. I know that at least one of the candidates, Evans, would not did not want to say whether the 2020 presidential election was rigged in favor of Joe Biden, other than saying she's not seen no evidence of that. I'm sure we'll see more of these candidates along the way.
All right, and Charlie.
Well, there's been a lot of concern raised, and particularly in recent weeks, about development of data centers and what impact they might have on the communities. And so there was legislation introduced that would impose new regulations on data center projects in Illinois. The concern is that data centers use a lot of electricity and they use a lot of water. And this act called the Power Act, abbreviation for it would require new data centers to pay for their own energy costs, including the infrastructure needed to generate the electricity. And the electricity would have to come from renewable sources, and the costs could not be shifted to residents. Another provision would require data centers to report their water usage, including how much they take in and discharge. Because the large centers can consume literally millions of gallons of water a day to cool the computer banks, and they would have to get permission. Data centers would have to get permission from the EPA, Illinois Environmental Protection Agency, which would regulate how the centers handle their wastewater. And also to protect the environment, the bill would require full environmental assessments for how data centers would impact a community. The legislation, my guess, is not going to go forward in the exact way that it's been introduced because Governor Pritzker has been very much in favor of data centers coming to Illinois. And early on in his time as governor, he signed a tax incentive proposal to attract them here. But he said lately that he'd be open to further regulation. So we'll see where this goes. But it's really a far-reaching bill.
Well, that's all the time we have for this episode of State Week. Our panel included Charlie Wheeler and the Chicago Tribune's Jeremy Gorner. Look for State Week where you get your podcasts through the NPR app and at nprillinois.org. I'm Sean Crawford. Join us next time.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capitol by public radio station, NPR, Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.